Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?
I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World with Richard Epstein, a professor at NYU and the University of Chicago Law Schools, as well as a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. And these last days, tumbling each day, is news about Elon Musk, whom I celebrate for SpaceX, for Starlink, certainly for Tesla, well-made automobiles of the present road that I watch moving past me. I always stop and tip my hat at a Tesla. However, right now, Elon Musk has gotten involved with a company that is marginal to my work, but at one time was extremely important. It was a professional tool, Twitter, to put a link to your recent demonstration of prowess, whether you wrote something or said something. No longer do I use Twitter, so I'm uninformed about what's happened to it. But there's a large debate now, not about the content of Twitter, but about the ownership. I read from a filing by Elon Musk in these last days addressed to the chairman of the board of Twitter. I invested in Twitter, writes Mr. Musk, as I believe it is in its potential to be the platform for free speech around the globe. And I believe free speech is a societal imperative for a functioning democracy. However, since making my investment, I now realize the company will neither thrive nor serve this societal imperative in its current form. Twitter needs to be transformed as a private company. He then goes on to give particulars of his so-called best and final offer. Twitter has extraordinary potential, he writes. I will unlock it. Richard, Elon Musk is making a business calculation that he can make Twitter into something it's not, which is a moneymaker. It is not alongside other social platforms such as Facebook or what you'd have to say, the great success of Google. It is not now printing money. It is struggling in the advertising market. The puzzle here is this rejection of Musk in the news and the popular news because of the politics, whereas I'm interested in his authority to move on Twitter and to buy it because he thinks there's an opportunity there. Isn't that what Warren Buffett does when he buys a railroad or at least a commanding share of a railroad? He sees opportunities that are not now being explored by the board, and he wants to make changes.
Look, the whole system of takeovers has generally been summarized by the following maxim. The person who takes it over sees greater value in the company than the person who takes it from, and the increase in value justifies the takeover and allows you to set in the middle a price that is higher than the old company could get by doing work and lower than it would be if Mr. Musk had to do this whole thing by itself. And there's a lot of that. It turns out, however, it's a very rocky road. First of all, I mean, I have no question that Twitter is engaged in some very dubious practices. The favorite one that I have is that on all matters having to do with COVID and health, it treats as the ultimate authority, the CDC and the WHO. My view is those should be objects of criticism like every other kind of organization. If they're right, they should prevail, but not. And I think Musk is right about that. I think that you can certainly transform the dialogue. What is not clear is how you can justify a premium of 38% over the current market value by making those sorts of changes. So I am somewhat dubious of the fact that he can find enough ways to jigger that thing up. If he's going to do it, it's not going to be by simply fine-tuning the way in which it works. It's in existing markets. He's going to have to find a way to do brand extension to some other area.
Oh, no, he has said he wants to jettison the advertising model and use a subscription model. He said that. Well, and I don't know whether the numbers are there, but it is a dramatically different Twitter if it no longer seeks advertising.
Well, first of all, I think the answer is to try to get this stuff with subscriptions when the ads for most people are a source of information rather than a source of interference is a very unlikely way to recoup the kind of money that he wants. You have to sort of sit down there and think of a subscription that's going to be $20, $30 a month for millions upon millions of people in order to make this thing go. And when people have free options without advertisement, not, there's a kind of a metric for this, John, which is, you know, I like to listen to music. I hate to listen to music commercials, right? So when I buy my YouTube subscription for $40 or $50, whatever it is for a year, I don't have to listen to a single commercial. Well, that's a huge benefit, but you think of what the price they're charging for that is. They're valuing the advertisement at relatively low numbers because they're willing to give it up. So what's he going to charge on these subscriptions? And it just doesn't come up to the billions very quickly. And remember, this is a controversial guy. It may well be that his adoption of the thing will lead people to depart. You know, he can do certain things like bringing back Donald Trump with his 90 million subscribers. I don't think that's going to be enough to push the needle. So to me, the financial side of this has always been a little bit strange. The most important side is the non-financial side, namely the ability to have a conservative player in the sort of mass media markets who will put on things that other people regard as persona non grata. Misinformation, disinformation, whatever you wish to call it, is an extremely dangerous metaphor by saying, in effect, we can shut down people with whose views we do not agree. And at first, it's people say, oh, you're just not an expert in this area, which is something I've always disliked as a kind of an argument as opposed to going to the merits. But then, in effect, when you do get experts in the area, they say, oh, you're just a renegade. So it doesn't matter how much you know or what you want to say. It turns out that the dominant forces won't let you talk. So here is somebody who's going to give you an alternative platform. And that would transform the markets, whether he makes money or not. Can he make money? Well, he's not going to take $43 billion or whatever it is out of his own pocket. And so the question is, has he lined up financing or can he line up?
He has not answered those questions. However, Richard, I want to explore the Twitter side of this. Twitter, yes. Two things. First of all, I read that Twitter did not do what other companies have done, which is have two classes of stock, so mm-hmm. that taking over the company by buying 100% of just one class of stock is possible. That would make it vulnerable to what Mr. Musk is intending. The second mm-hmm. detail here, and I think it's equally interesting, is that Twitter is constructing a poison pill, which would dilute the worth of stockholders now. So in order to defend itself, it's ready to, in some fashion, abridge itself. And that is not good practices, if I understand how you grow a business.
Well, you certainly can't grow a business trying to fight off somebody else. The theory about a poison pill is what it does is it allows all shareholders to prevent a unified front so that the premium they can exact in the event of a takeover would be larger than if the shareholders were disorganized. But there's also a possibility that this will simply kill any offer from taking place. So there's an endless debate in the literature as to whether or not management, when it puts one of these things into place, is trying to enhance share value, or whether it turns out management is trying to put this in place, is simply trying to entrench itself in the status quo. It's very hard when these takeovers come against the poison pill. There's been a lot of empirical research done by others, certainly not by me, which suggests that if there's some gains to be had by these coercive, forcible takeovers, most of the gain is taken by the party that's acquired rather than by the acquiring party, which is why it is hostile takeovers have declined very rapidly in the last decade, even though they were extremely popular for a while in the 80s and perhaps the early 90s. So I think the business side of this is extremely shaky. The publicity side is, of course, quite wonderful. The most important thing to understand about this as a kind of an intellectual matter is that none of the conservative platforms have been able to take off and to get a tiny fraction of the number of shares that the dominant platforms like the Google platform and the Twitter platform and Amazon, whoever's doing this kind of business. These companies seem to be able to attract the mass market. Musk is trying to change the nature of the game, and his strategy has to be that there'll be enough, quote, conservative type or independent types who pay substantial sums to be on a network which doesn't do this. But I'm like you. I gave up my Twitter account to neglect because the thing that is most difficult about it is you say something that's controversial, you can be abused beyond all recognition. And so what you're doing is you write 20 lines of your own and then there are 500 comments and abusive statements by everybody else. Why would anybody want to be a lightning rod for that?
Especially because the suggestion is that most of those negative comments are by robots.
That I didn't even know, but it's certainly possible. And so I think, in effect, it's just not a very good situation. My own view about this is that the way in which this will work better is if you get professional platforms, institutions of one kind or another, which then take a smorgasbord of authors and put them together and are capable and should be capable of making sure that certain kinds of comments just don't go on the site. I mean, Twitter is very insistent about that when it comes to obscenity and all sorts of other things.
Yes.
I think the actual situation is the comments to the tweets are often much worse and much more offensive than the tweets themselves. And that then creates an unwillingness of people to go online, because what they understand is that the retaliation is very, very
effective. We just have 30 seconds, Richard. Do you believe Mr. Musk is in a position to pursue this, to change Twitter without actually owning it? We have 30 seconds.
The answer is, I think there'll be some slight reaction to this, but I don't even know which direction it's going to go in. It may stiffen the progressive resolve never to let this man take it over. I don't think at this particular point, seeing what I've seen, that he will be able to raise the money on the basis of the skeleton offer.
Right.
And so this is not going to be a two-act play. It's going to be a five-act play. And Richard A. Epstein does not know who is going to emerge victorious.
The Mega Billionaire Report from Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. Mr. Bezos and Mr. Musk will live to speak another day. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hi there, my name's Andy.
And my name's Anna.
And we are two of the four hosts of the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. We present every week the most amazing, wonderful, insane, hilarious, bizarre facts you've ever heard.
Facts like, did you know America has a national grocery bag packing competition?
Did you know, Anna, the company Volkswagen sells more sausages than it does cars?
Yes, we've got those two facts and about a billion more in our podcast archives for you to listen to. We chat about them, we laugh about them, we make the occasional terrible pun.
It's great fun. It's called No Such Thing as a Fish. Why don't you listen now?